Hey guys, welcome to episode 22 of the JV Club. As you might be able to hear from my voice, I am a little under the weather, very nasal, and I recorded this podcast episode last night, also nasal. So I welcome you to forgive me for that because I don't get sick very often, but I have been kind of burning the candle at both ends. And everybody knows a candle gets a cold when it is burned from both ends. So I hope you enjoy the episode despite the nasality. And I want to get straight into shoutouts, and I mean straight into shoutouts because I think some shoutout necessities have fallen through the cracks with this new job that I've been working. I've just been working so much, and it's been harder for me to keep track of a lot of the things in my life that are the most important, including the wonderful comments that I get from you guys. I am so far behind in shouting out the iTunes feedback that I wouldn't be surprised if no one ever left iTunes feedback again. And that's really the most important for the success of my podcast. So I apologize for that. But so many of you leave iTunes feedback and then you also tweet me or Facebook me. I'm hoping that I'm sort of covering my ground better than I think I am. For those of you who consistently leave Facebook feedback and tweet me, I want to shout you out every single time you do it. Sometimes I don't. But this is a long series. Daniel, Emily, Alex, Jody, Ben, Mary V, Jasmine, Julietta, Ben W, Curtis, Eric, Oscar, John M, Ben C. That's a lot of Bens. And my name would have been Ben if I were a boy. I don't know if I ever told anyone that. I mean, on the podcast. Benjamin was going to be my name. Benjamin Varney. Shannon, Harvey, D-X-A-N-A. It's D-X-A-N-A. Joel, Lou, Jay Shepherd, Caitlin, Tammy, Jason, Jessica B, Michael M, Mike W, who grew up with me, like, down the street. Actually, he was two streets over. Paige S, Alice, Deanna, Liz D, and that's Liz with two Z's, by the way. Anton and another Jason. Thank you guys so much. This podcast episode is, I would hazard to say, it's the most emotional for me. It's not a barrel of laughs. Kulop is incredibly brilliant and funny. And if you listen to her podcast, Who Charted, or follow any of the other marvelous things she does in her career, you know this already, but she did have, a sort of extraordinary and challenging childhood and adolescence. And I knew that. So I sort of had the expectation that this might be an emotional podcast episode, but I never like to force that on anyone. So as far as I knew, we could end up just joking about stuff and laughing and playing MASH or using the cootie catcher. We didn't do any of that. There was a lot to talk about, but I'm hoping that it will stir you guys in some of the ways that it stirred me and hopefully maybe be of help to some of you who might be struggling or have struggled in a similar or even different way. So thanks again. And I'm sure there will be more goofy craziness on episodes to come. But for now, please enjoy this slightly more subdued and emotional, but hopefully still quite lovely episode. I want to thank Kulop so much. She's a tremendous force to be reckoned with in the most amazing, beautiful way. I'll talk to you guys soon. Okay, bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
All right, the first thing I need to get out of the way is this voice. I want everyone to take in that I've never been more nasal. I'm not sure. I'll tell you this. I get a lot of nice compliments about the sound of my voice, which I didn't have a sense of until maybe last year. I didn't have a sense of my voice being pleasant or unpleasant. I guess I think I probably thought it was more unpleasant and character-y than pleasant. It's all going to end tonight. Today, tonight, whenever, whatever time of day, whatever day of whatever year you're listening to this, nasal Varney is going to dissuade you from ever thinking that I have a pleasant sounding voice.
I'm here with Kulop.
Vilaysok, I should say. And her voice will be much less nasal than mine. And I'll allow her to speak whenever she likes.
Oh, I didn't know.
There's no intro.
There's no intro? Oh.
No intro whatsoever.
I think you didn't realize the power of your voice because you knew people saw you and yeah. saw how gorgeous you are.
Well.
And so you could have a permanently nasal voice and no one would care.
Uh-oh. Wait, no, there's more to come. Super phlegmy cough. Kulop has braved my sick den. I'm not that sick. I've been sick for just long enough that I'm 100% positive I'm not contagious. I'm also not that sick. I never had the day other than Sunday was pretty bad. But I never had that day where you're like, I think I'm going to die. It was never that serious.
As your friend and not a doctor.
Yes, so correct. You are not a doctor.
In no way a doctor.
Not even in a little bit of a way
are
you a doctor.
You are working your A, can I say ass? Is it okay to swear?
Yes,
okay,
you cool. absolutely may.
You're working your butt off. And so this is just, it's your, you know, you're a little tired. Yeah. You're a lot of tired.
Yeah. And you know what? Yeah, we were recording, we were shooting yesterday and I felt like I was so overwhelmed by the amount of stuff that we were covering yesterday. And, somebody was like, how are you feeling? And I said, to be honest with you, I'm so congested that I'm in a fog and it's forcing me to not give a shit. And it's kind of nice. And so the lesson that I feel like I took away from yesterday was, okay, so when you are firing on all cylinders and you're super anxious and you're just spinning your wheels with anxiety and stuff, try to remove the same amount of energy and piece of your brain, like give yourself a sort of fake lobotomy and just get back to the place that I was yesterday when I was sick because I just didn't have room to care. And it actually, everything went super smoothly.
Room time.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're able to sort of relax and let go of stuff in an organic way? Or does it take your body going, I'm going to shut down a piece of you now?
Ooh, it depends on the thing. Listeners, Janet Varney and I went on an astrological retreat.
We did. And so I've never talked about it on the podcast.
I'm just going to drop that. I know that one of my rising is a Gemini.
Yes.
So let me go right off the bat, turn off anybody who's not into astrology.
Let's do it. I always like the feeling of post-record when I can just sense all the guys, especially. I'll just single them out right away.
Yeah.
All the guys going, done, and I'm done.
That's it. I'm very Gemini in that it's either lobotomy
or hyper, like, crazy.
Yeah, and it depends.
Yeah.
I think it comes that part of me and my mind and my body, and sometimes a disconnect, is I kickbox with our mutual friend Kendra, and there'll just times where I have to really be focused. My mind wants to shut off sometimes and just freestyle, even though we're doing, it's like 1-2 body.
Right.
There's always this time when I was like, I'm so sorry. My body says, you're going to do a cross.
Right.
And just like, no.
I am going to have a sort of a kickboxing tantrum.
Yeah. It's not even like, it's just all of a sudden like, I've got this. I figured it out. And then I either want to go on autopilot or I just want to do my own thing.
Yeah.
So I think that happens also when I'm sick.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see that. Let's go back to the astrological retreat for a second because a lot of people are going to be asking questions about this. One of the things that I loved about what we did, and it's just hard to get into it, and also I think we don't need to get into it because it's the kind of thing that it is very much a you had to be there.
Yeah.
But what I enjoy about what we did, and this is a community of people in Los Angeles that, of which, you know, some other people like June are a part, it's sort of like, what are the different ways in which you can get to know yourself so as to feel more comfortable in your own skin and improve yourself? And I don't know that I associate strongly with astrology, nor did many of us,
yeah,
before, during, or after, in some ways, this retreat that we went on, but it gave me a really specific window into my strengths and weaknesses. And I think that's something that all a bunch of us went together, guys. Yeah. In fact, a bunch of podcasters all went. I'm sure if you follow Cool Up's other appearances or Elizabeth Lame on Totally Lame, you've already heard this discussed, and Gray Delisle. So they've already outed themselves.
Sure.
And I was outed on one of those podcasts as well, as having been there.
But, I'm sure by me.
Which, fantastic. Yeah, we talked about it on your podcast.
Well, I think, you know, to piggyback on what you said too, it's like my strengths, my weaknesses, and then a sort of surrender into them.
Yeah.
That it's not such a fight. Of like, this is how I am, like, and because of that, it's like, oh, I can just be me. And then on the flip side, to see someone else's struggles and to have full compassion.
Mm-hmm. That was such a huge part of it too. Yes.
It's like, oh, well, that's what they're working with. That's what this person is working with.
Yeah.
And to go, okay. And then so I can give them a break, and I can give myself a break.
Yeah.
So it was very powerful and a very beautiful experience.
It sure was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know what else was a powerful and beautiful experience? I had a lemon cucumber before you got here. It's all I had time for. I raced home on my bike, opened up my refrigerator, realized there was nothing there except for a couple of things I got at the farmer's market, including shaped like a lemon, looks like kind of a cucumber. I mean, there's a reason it's called a lemon cucumber. I wish that I had saved even one sliver of it to show you.
Oh my gosh.
But I guess it's a hybrid. I mean, it's from an organic farm, so it's not like they're doing crazy weird things.
They're not
they're not cloning and making monsters, vegetable monsters. But it is shaped like a lemon and tastes a little bit like a lemon, but it's absolutely a cucumber.
Crunchy,
a little tiny bit tart. I love a cucumber. Ooh. I just sliced it up and ate it, and it was fantastic.
Delicious.
Really, really good.
I want a piece.
I know. I wish I'd bought more than one, but it was an experiment. I was like, I clearly need to bring this home and acquaint myself with this. And it also, it's suddenly become very important to me to visit a working farm, which I guess I've done maybe when I was younger. I feel like I went to one when I lived in France for a little bit during my high school years. But all of a sudden, it feels really important. Like, I need to go. I need to visit some chickens. I need to watch some cows being milked.
I'm very interested in this.
Are we going
to
go?
Yeah, I would love to.
Field trip?
I would love to do a field trip.
Out there.
Oh, yeah. No, I get a box of fresh veggies from a co-op a little bit up north. They constantly, of course, the main farmer's name is Jebediah.
You can't be serious.
So serious. No, it's not. It's Thaddeus.
Thaddeus is a left turn from the most like typical and what you would expect, which maybe it would be Jebediah.
Yeah.
Thaddeus is lovely. That's a lovely name. I don't know the origin of Thaddeus.
Thaddeus.
I mean, it sounds like Greek or Latin, but is it like a, is it sort of an Amish or Shaker farm, or is
it's just a nice organic working farm? Yeah, it's an organic working farm. It's a kind of a co-op of a bunch of different farms. And I get the Los Angeles box, which is mixed of vegetables and fruits.
Never a lemon cucumber, though.
Never a lemon cucumber. No, I got carrots. I got plums and peaches and lettuce and radishes. But no, not a lemon cucumber.
Lemon cucumber, guys.
I'm very interested in gardening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested in urban gardening.
Mm-hmm.
I think is very interesting. I'm interested in Oprah's gardens. Follow her on Instagram.
Fantastic.
Her halls are just like they're so Oprah-ian.
Yes.
She's like, look what I got from my garden, and
oh,
it's just
you
like
gotta love it.
First of all, beautiful. Just the wicker baskets alone, there's that. And then there's like a dozen of them overflowing with like fresh goods. I just booked these this morning.
Well, you're describing a similar phenomenon to what I experience. Although I will say I prefer... I mean, listen, I don't know either of these women. I have absolutely no idea what they're like as human beings. I think you get a pretty strong sense of what Oprah's like, and I do love her.
Yeah.
But I was going to say... It's that same sort of like living in a different world. I talked about this a little bit with Maria on the podcast, but the Martha Stewart thing too, which yeah. even after everything that happened in the prison and da-da-da-da, I love, I do that thing, which I know a lot of us do, and maybe it's my version of the obsession that people have with celebrities, although I don't feel that way about what Brad and Angelina are up to or anything like that. I don't feel like I care or I'm comfortable with that. But when a lifestyle of this sort of larger than life female character is presented to me as a gift to me, like, no, I want to share this with you. I want to share with you what my, you know, fifth home in Nantucket is like, or Oprah and her beautiful garden.
Yeah.
I am completely fascinated. I just read to my boyfriend on Sunday morning. I read him out loud the calendar in Martha Stewart Living or whatever they're calling it now. Have you ever read this? Her calendar makes me crazy.
Yes. I no longer have
I gotta see
a
if I can find one.
Yeah, you gotta find it. I no longer have a subscription, but I will pick it up. Because it's the same thing you're talking about. Yeah.
I'm so afraid that I don't have one.
Oh, no.
Keep talking.
Look, these two ladies are some badass bitches. Oh, and
they're
badass as much as they are bitches. And I still love them.
I mean, but isn't that...
Listen, this is not professional of me at all. I'm still looking for the Martha Stewart Living, but now I've got the microphone in hand. Isn't that... I mean, that goes to the whole, like, how successful are you able to be unless you can be a serious ball buster? I don't know.
I think you have to be a ball buster.
I think you do, too.
I think everyone, even guys, you have to be able to bust these said balls.
Do you feel like you have become more of a ball buster as you've gotten older? And do you feel like that was a choice, or do you feel like it's something that's sort of evolved with time as you've gotten to know yourself better, or do you feel like it's a combination of both?
I think it's always been there. Guys, here it comes again. Warning, astrology bomb. But
here it is.
My moon is Aries. And I think I always was this way. And then I saw that when I would push too hard, and that, you know, being a ball buster or push too hard and saying what I think or going first or being loud, that, you know, around middle school, just about around then is when, like, maybe people don't react well to that. So then I started to kind of manage myself.
Adapt to survive.
Yeah, and just kind of, you know, really just kind of hung back, or try to be quiet, try to be more accommodating. And then as I've, like, really in the last 3 years where I'm just like, let's get into this before I have a kid, which I very much want now, of, like, what's really going on? Let me see what's this. And so part of it's been like the love of like just accepting that aspect of me and that it's not something I need to always choose.
Right.
But I have that. And I think I started developing really like early and just the idea
physically?
Of like, physically, yeah. Yeah. And I think because of that sort of mentally too, your cat loves me.
Yeah, she's
not
a lap cat by any stretch of the imagination, and she has moved in on Kulop. I mean,
both your dog and your cat.
They definitely like to get in people's business, and they love the ladies. But she never moves in like that. She's just settling in.
She's really sweet. What I was gonna say is being comfortable that I am a threat. Threatening. I can be threatening. I actually can be threatening. That's okay. Because
That is so interesting. That's such an interesting word to use because that is, I'm trying to think of like a word that has power in it that makes me more uncomfortable and I'm not sure I can think of one. It is really hard to think of yourself as threatening. It's easy when you're like, when I'm riding my bike sometimes and I feel like I'm in my body, yeah. not to be like ridiculous about that, but I think in today's world, we do kind of disconnect from our physical selves a lot. And so it's important to find a way to sort of be in your body in that way. Then I kind of do feel like it's almost a survival technique, though, when you're on your bike in LA. It feels like yeah. I better think of myself as a badass and not necessarily take risks, but feel like I'm empowered to own this part of the road or to keep myself safe or to...
I think as a woman, just walking around.
Yeah. I think I like thinking about myself as being threatening in the abstract. But the second I think about somebody being threatened by me, like a real person, I'm like, oh, no. Let me get demure. Like, let me make sure this person likes me and it's okay. And I want to fix the situation.
Would be go so high.
Like, me too.
So high. Like, oh, everything. Like all of a sudden, any way to like infantile. Yeah. Like, make myself, like, it was just, again, survival.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I come from, like, a kind of a traumatic childhood. And then, okay, so I started developing early, but, like, not really having the tools, not really understanding.
Should we put this into context? You want to tell, do you want to say where you were born? And then what we can sort of, you don't have to, like, get into it from birth to, you know, adolescence if you don't want to, but if you want to give like a snapshot of that and sort of, or as much or as little as you want, I guess that's what I'm saying.
My parents are immigrants from Laos. They came post Vietnam War. So they're
Laos is in between Thailand and Vietnam.
Yeah. And Laos was the staging ground for a lot of US activity to get into Vietnam. The secret war, which is not so secret anymore, was there. And they went from fleeing to Thailand, and I was conceived in a refugee camp, to flying over to DC where my mom gave birth to me. And then within a month later, because her uncle had kind of gone ahead of her, had set himself up with a sponsor family in Minnesota, and that's how I ended up in Minnesota. That's where I grew up until I was 18 and moved out to LA.
But you didn't live with your... Did you always live with your parents?
I always lived, mainly with my parents. My sponsor family, we lived with them for the first 2 years of my life, and they still remain in my life. But yeah, mainly with my parents.
Okay.
So my parents are immigrants. They come from what is still a third world country. Hitting is normal.
What you would consider to be excessive, what American families would consider to be excessive.
Yeah, it was normal. And then, so then my parents also had to contend with the fact that they are in a brand new country. They don't know the language. They don't have the tools. The idea of, you know, your therapy or parenting, these are things, you know, parental guidance from somebody other, you know.
Yeah.
They're on their own in so many ways. And so my parents and I started to learn English at the same rate. And I always say that we just never had a chance because I was born with a mouth in me. Someone was like who I know better. They're not pronouncing words right. You know, so that's a face maybe that's saying that maybe you want to slap around.
Oh, yes. Please blame yourself. For God's sake, please blame yourself.
Yeah. No, it's...
But I think there's something to... I mean, of course, I don't know what I'm talking about. But there's something to the idea of you being evenly matched with your parents in an almost inappropriate way because of the language barrier and because of their adjustment to this new world that feels like... I mean, I don't know. There's something about that feels really specific to me that, and by the way, I'm not condoning the behavior at all. I think I'm trying to understand it without condoning it whatsoever. But I think there's got to be something, I don't know. It just seems like your role as a parent, particularly from a more traditional, I don't know, however we think of American parenting, if there's, again, like I'm just speculating on all of this. So please no one write an article about me and my lack of knowledge. But I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is it just seems like when your parents are compromised in some way, and you're a kid who's picking things up and fast and acclimating, and it's not like you're unlearning anything like this, you sort of would have to as an adult coming into a new environment. No wonder you were a total sassafras, because I'm sure you were impatient with, you know what I mean? Like, I would be impatient with parents who were like, I'd be like, come on, guys, come on. Yeah, get with it, which is by no stretch of the imagination your fault.
No, definitely not. And I think, you know, it's a term that I've learned rather recently based off this, but I think I was born narcissistically wounded. Mm-hmm. And that term I learned from reading Are You My Mother by Allison, I'm going to say her name wrong. She also wrote Fun Home, mm-hmm. which is a graphic novel. This is her... really about her and her mom's relationship and stuff like that, but she's obsessed with this child psychologist, Winnicott, Charles Winnicott, and that's mm-hmm. she talks about the narcissistic wound where a child is almost risen to the level, or is put to the level of spouse, and that mm-hmm. They boundaries of what they're told about, you know, the parents' relationship. About the inner workings of their relationship, are held as maybe a confidant. Good. Usually it's like the oldest child or the only child, mm-hmm. and who start to learn that that's how they receive love, and the personality sort of like kind of goes from there.
Sure.
And so I'm like, you know, me and my parents are having this experience together, but yeah, like, and that's the main problem with my parents and I, just like boundaries of like what's said to me. And then, but then the constant pull of like who has authority in anything.
Yeah.
It was like, it was a constant, like, who has authority? Well, school says that you're supposed to brush your teeth like before or like right after you eat. And my parents were like, right when you wake up. And those would be just like bitter rows.
Interesting.
Yeah, of just like, you know, that's a minute thing, but like, yeah.
So you were sassy. I don't know why I keep using that word.
Because you know I am.
You were sassy. You knew what the result would yield. I mean, you knew that you'd be smacked around, no? And you did it anyway. What's that about?
yeah, because I always knew that they weren't right about certain things, and there was a lot of immigrants came from Laos at one time, a lot of Hmong people at one time too, so I was around a lot of kids kind of in a similar situation of that, living two lives, different at home, different at school. But what I had cousins who very much put their head down and just kind of, and I just... It is something about my personality. I have a problem with authority.
I love it.
But yeah, I just was like, that's not right. Yeah, you're getting angry and you're yelling at me, and I still don't buy it. I think
that's amazing that you had the presence of mind and the kind of fortitude to have that, to take that authority for yourself and say, this is not cool. I mean, I'm not saying that you said to them, this is not cool.
No, I'm sure I said more awful things. I mean, I think that would be cute if I would have said that. Hey, Mom, this ain't cool.
I'm staging a protest. And you had, like, signs. All we are saying.
Adorable. Yeah. Yeah, but if, like, you know, your mom's, like, mad at you and she keeps constantly telling you that she found you in the garbage. I go, I don't think that's right.
Did she say that?
I know you didn't find me in the garbage.
So she would just say horrible things to make you feel terrible.
Our game was definitely like, she would, because, you know, sometimes my play, if I would get in trouble for talking back. Like, it would just like the thing, it would just get worse and worse if I would talk back, right? So then my thing would then not to say anything and not be affected, which then her play would be to just like level anything she could think of at me. And, you know, I mentioned this in another podcast too. It was just kind of regular beatings, mainly by my mom. And I would do.
Mainly by your mom.
Mainly by my mom, yeah. Yeah, which comes to play later when I find out that my dad's not my real dad. And
how old were you when they found that out?
I was 14 years old.
Perfect age to find out.
Great time. Great, great time. 14 years old, and my parents had gotten in a fight, and I had defended my dad, and my mom, full red face, looked at me and goes, "Why are you defending him? He's not your father."
Oh my God, Kulop. I cannot believe that you've found out at all, like, that would be the context in which you would find out. That's like a nightmare.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that's a nightmare.
But then it also is one of those, like, really—
did it make sense to you?
Points. I think—
no, not at
completely.
The time.
There was like, no part of you that was like, oh actually, no. I suspect, or nothing.
I mean, just it doesn't make sense. Like, oh, now when I have a little bit more, by no means do I have a complete picture, because my mom is like a sphinx with questions. Mm. But at the time, it's like, you know, like, yeah, okay, now I think, okay, well, that's weird that I saw two different birth certificates, one with my last name, which is my Vilaysack, which is my dad's, adopted dad's last name, and one that's Senavongsai, which is my mom's maiden name. So that is, I'm like, okay, that's interesting, weird, maybe. I think my mom says, I'm like, oh, that was just like a mistake or whatever. I'm like, okay, fine. That I am a full foot taller than both my parents.
Mm.
Okay, like, you know, and I have younger sisters. They're much younger than me, but they are quite short as well. Uh-huh. But see, I always thought that I looked like my dad, and part of it is because my mom and I just we always butted heads. So I think part of it was like, I hoped that I looked more like my dad.
Sure.
But yeah, like when I found that out, it's just because your mind doesn't— it wouldn't make sense. It just wouldn't make sense that he wasn't. This is the life that I've led. All the pictures make sense. I wouldn't think any other way. My mom, when she saw— I was destroyed. And then her trying to make it better, you know, she's like, "Don't you remember when you were two and you stood in the courtroom and you pointed to your father and said that was your father? When that was when your dad adopted you?" That was— I'm like, "No, I don't remember that." Like, that wouldn't make sense, because I think I would— you got to know that I didn't know that, Mom.
Yeah.
Because first of all, you know, I'd say something. Like,
yeah.
Our roles are
very all just living. Yeah, we're all just living with this thing that we're not talking about, even though we yell about everything else.
Yeah, it just wouldn't— yeah, but yeah, it was really, really, really awful. And then you start to go, whoa, like that feeling when everybody seems to know about it and you didn't. Like, all of, like, the people, all of my caretakers, God, all of my babysitters, all my sponsor family. When we were with the sponsor family, the first year, my father was there. And there was these pictures, these Christmas pictures, one of my first Christmases. And, you know, me and Tree, me with my sponsor family. And then when I told my sponsor family, they showed me parts of that film roll that I'd never seen where my father, my biological father's in it. And that's just—
and so what's the story with your biological father? Now that you know, and how long did it take for you to get these bits and pieces, or did you get nothing at all and then just suddenly
I got a lot the first day, and then a little bit more during the week, and then it was back to— well, to explain, my mom— I was like, Mom said that. I'm like, oh, this is just another horrible thing Mom's saying at me.
Right.
And so I run to my dad and I'm like, "Dad, Mom saying this." And then he just looked at me and I was like, oh man, like this is—
oh my God.
And so then I just like took off. I just ran outside and I have shoes on. Just ran until I couldn't run, and then I was like, where am I gonna go? And
that feeling when I mean, just from even smaller things that happen when you're younger and you're tied to your parents and your home in that way, I can't imagine how it must have been to be like, and now I get to sleep in this bed every night from here on out. I would just— you must have felt like you wanted to explode.
I mean, That feeling you're describing, though, was just about every day.
But even leading up to that point.
Yeah, of like, I'm tied to these two.
When did you ever, like did, you have, did you have an opportunity to, I mean, I know kids are resilient. I mean, did you have an opportunity to relax ever? It just seems like you must have been tense and, I mean, I just can't imagine. I mean, I was not that happy of a kid, but I definitely can't imagine just feeling like I'm just balled up inside all the time.
Been desperately trying. This is why I went on an astrological retreat. This is why I do all these weirdo things. So when you go back to the game with my mom of the, like, outwardly, I'm fine. You don't affect me. But my inner working, I still, and I'm desperately trying to quit acting like I'm living in trauma when I live a charmed life.
Yeah.
My life doesn't even come up to what I used to deal with. But because every day I would come home and not know what was going on and have to figure out what lie, how to avoid that cat and mouse game of not getting hit or not getting in trouble or not, you know, it starts to just a habit. But it was always tense. There was always something could explode. Now, oftentimes I would not help the situation. Oftentimes I would exacerbate because I think that I'm some sort of
criminal mastermind. But what's going to help a situation like that anyway? You know what I'm saying? Like, what's to be expected? Like, what? Like, in what way are you meant to conduct yourself to take responsibility for that somehow not happening? I mean, I can't imagine. That's way too much responsibility for a young person. Here, Kulop, manipulate this situation to avoid this happening. Because that's going to keep you from, I mean, you're going to feel miserable no matter what. I think there is that sort of explosion of like, I know it's coming. Maybe I can control when and how if I act out.
And also, too, just that control you're describing goes back to that idea of like what we were talking about when we're like talking about being a threat or being of just like for me to just. I remember my friend saying, like, you seem like you're a salve, or like when I'm around you, it's like a bubble bath. And that's great. But I also, in that moment, I knew that's all by, there's a bit of manipulation and design in that. There's a lot of control in that. Now, it's not that I don't love or that I don't mean those things or I'm a sociopath. It's not that. But what also wouldn't happen is I wouldn't also bring myself. I would be like, I want to make you feel good. I want to make you feel good. And if asked how I felt or if there was something negative, I didn't want to bring that up or I didn't. And that was really hard for me to be intimate.
Sure.
With people. So there was a lot of intimacy growing up. Not a lot of trust growing up.
To get more specific about your adolescence, your high school years in Minnesota, did you feel like you were the person that other people came to for comfort, or was it even more superficial than that? What were your friendships like?
Specifically high school.
When were your sisters born? How much younger?
They are 9 and 11 years younger than I am.
Okay.
And
so you had like some young kids scampering around when you were an adolescent.
Yeah, they were for the most part in my care. So not only was I expected to do the stereotypical Asian, you know, get the best grades, get, you know, I also had to do the laundry, everyone's laundry. I had to clean the house. I had to take care of my sisters. I had to take them soccer practice to all of that. That was also part of my duty. I also had to have a job.
So you didn't even really have time for friends?
I wanted friends. I mean, I had friends, but I actually kind of think it's kind of like a defect, the fact that I don't have like a lot of friends, you know, and some people have friends, you know, from kindergarten or middle school, or I don't have a lot. I don't have a lot of that. Like, part of it too is because, like, you know, the real intimacy. I didn't want people to come to my house. And this is horrible. I was like, I didn't like how it smelled. It's like Asian food or like, it was, there was so much duty that I had to do. And I tried to keep that separate. I kept lives so separate, you know.
Did you like going over to other people's houses?
I do. Yeah. I loved it. I mean, that was, but that is also stemming from, like, I wanted to live with my sponsor family. Like, it was like this white Baptist family with like five older brothers, and they wanted me to live with them. They wanted to adopt me, actually, and it's just my mom wouldn't let me go, and she shouldn't have. But can you imagine here, just to give, you know, my parents, look, I don't talk to them, but I want to be really even-handed about when I speak about them too. But it's like, just imagine, like, you have your kid in the U.S. It's a better life, right? And then you're coming from a refugee camp, and she's going, I don't want to eat shrimp. Like, I don't want to eat. Like, you own a home after 5 years of being in this country.
Wow, that's impressive.
And you own a restaurant.
Wow.
After 5 years of being in this country, your own restaurant.
Wow.
And there are small food, and I want McDonald's.
Like, right.
And then on top of it, my mom had to know how I wanted to live with another family, and how painful was that?
But which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Like, of course you wanted to live with another family, because your association with your own culture, by virtue of how your parents treated you and what your experience with them was, of course you wanted the picture book version of something that.
And that was always kind of a thing too, because like when they wanted me when I was like two, when my bio took off, and my mom started dating my dad. I think.
And so he just left. He didn't want to be a dad. And
no, apparently he. I heard from my mom's friend. I only hear things about my family in really inappropriate ways. But my mom's close friend said that when he didn't want my mom to be pregnant. Like, they came, I think his idea was like, we came to start a new life, like, and he didn't want her to be pregnant, and he kicked her when she was pregnant with me. And it's just not something he wanted. And so.
Do you think that she somehow was taking that stuff out on you?
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, I talked about those pictures. I always thought I looked like my dad. I look like my biological dad. Like, wow. It is. And she even said, when she's like, I see him in you, and it's like,
I can't. Yeah, that doesn't bode well for you.
Again, back to, like, I still go back to, like, we never had a chance. And there was, again, to be fair to my parents, there was definitely a lot of push and pull too, when like someone was ready to be there. And, you know,
had you felt like you had an ally in your who you thought was your biological dad, but who was not? Did he also abuse you, or was he a little bit more of like stepping back and kind of acting as a quiet ally? And
he would sometimes be my ally. I mean, he's still, you know, very traditional, like, too. But yeah, definitely, my mom was very yelly, and he wasn't so.
And when you found out that he wasn't your father, how did that change your relationship to him, or did it?
I remember after I ran off, then I kind of like there was a pickup truck in our driveway, and I just kind of laid there, pickup truck bed, crying, looking up at the stars. And he came out and got me, and he put me to bed. He put me in bed, and he just told me he loved me. He always treated me like, and he did. He always, like, I was his own and stuff. And I mean, we have our own problems too. My main issues have been with my mom. She was so aggressive.
But if nobody's standing up for you, it doesn't. I mean, there's a passivity, and there's a enabling that's happening with the other parent.
With my dad, when he would yell, he'd be even scarier.
Sure.
Than my mom. Then we'd just back off. With right. My mom, we'd go toe to toe, head to head, on just on everything, on almost virtually everything. But you know, in that same moment, my mom. He put me to bed, and my mom woke me up like an hour later or something. She's like, I want you to talk to someone on the phone. I'm like, what? And she wanted to make it better, but she made it worse because she had called my biological father's brother, who lived in Mountain Lake, which is like an hour south of where I was living. And so now she shoved a phone in my ear, and now I'm speaking to people that I have no – who knew about me, who wondered about me.
That's so weird.
And who – and I'm – and it's just like this is within like – we're talking like 3 hours of me getting the initial news, you know? So I'm just like, what – what is happening? Like, I don't
Well, and to your point, everything you were saying about, like, everybody else knowing and this is how you're finding out and there that there would even be someone to call who, like, here's another person who knew about this that I didn't know about.
We've thought about you so much and let's get together, let's meet. And then I talked to a cousin, a girl cousin, and I just – it's weird. And then the time that we were supposed to meet, a week passes, 2 weeks pass, and I don't know what's happened. And then I hear – my bio, who's in Laos, he basically went, from what I have been told, went from Minnesota to California. I think he had some kids there. Then he got kicked out of the country because of tax evasion or fraud or something delicious like that. Goes back to Laos. He's in Laos now. He has, I know, at least a son. He's remarried. So hit my biological father from Laos talks to my uncle, my biological uncle in Mountain Lake, and tells him that he doesn't want him to talk to me for fear that I would want money from him, some sort of. And so now this man that I never wanted to know, like I was actually kind of like, I don't care. I don't care. Right. I have a dad. I don't care. He has rejected me. Like
you let him in just enough, or he was let into your world.
Yeah. So I was rejected by him. I'm his progeny, basically.
Twice. Twice, at
and
least.
And then my uncle and that girl voice cousin, they're gone. And then also, I don't think too hard on it, but like I have half brothers and sisters. You know, who knows? Who knows what I have out there? But he... And at 14, now we can all remember what 14's like. Right?
Well, that's what I was going to say earlier. That's why my heart is just extra breaking, because it is so hard to be a teenager with all the things that are just happening naturally to your body physiologically and to your mind and to your heart and all of that stuff. It's hard if you have the most perfect upbringing in the world, and to find that stuff out. To experience everything up to that point that you experience, and then to find that out, I just can't even.
And I was in a hip hop stage.
I can't even. And you were in a hip hop phase. Oh,
it was a lot of like. It was a perfect start.
Love it all. Hip hop. Please tell me that there are photos floating around of hip hop.
Yeah, I'll give you some photos.
Okay, good. What does that mean in terms of how you dressed? I'm totally lightening it up for a second.
You brought
it up.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was the height of it, it was size 40 JNCOs. I was smaller then than I am now. So size 40 JNCOs, which if you guys remember what JNCOs were, they were just like very big, voluminous, almost like bigger than Belle at the bottom.
Yeah.
And then I would...
Like, how did we take a step without tripping?
Oh, yeah, you couldn't. You had that specific walk.
Right.
Yeah, and you had to pick it up.
A lot of managing of that wardrobe.
Yeah. I'm a great manager. I'm a great producer now. I think that's why. That's how.
I'm sure that's the foundation for it.
Exactly. And then because I hung out with a lot of Lao bloods, that again, Minnesota, Lao.
As bloods. In,
it's like we're taking
a gang.
Yeah, as a
I know
gang.
You're really siphoning it down to like a very
really
specific group.
Really boiling it down
from
a small section of population to a niche,
sure,
to a band of people.
I think the amount of people who can specifically empathize, not sympathize, but empathize. I'm not sure what my listenership of Laotian. Minnesotan, ex-hip-hop, ex-bloods are, I welcome you to reach out and let Kulop know you're listening.
So I'm 32. I'm not 31, girl. I'm 32.
Own
it. I'm 32. And so this is the time, like, so what's happening and that I'm not aware of is Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, mm-hmm. K-Rock, you know. What I'm into is Bone Thugs and Harmony, Snoop, all of like NWA, and it was a little earlier, but so then that means Dr. Dre. I'm into R&B music. I'm into, yeah, I mean, I think it was French class in seventh grade when two girls came in wearing all black because Kurt Cobain died. And I'm just like, I don't understand.
Like, I can't relate to that.
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I'm hanging out with other Asians who have co-opted black culture, actual black people, because they were, you know, we were all minorities in yeah. school. And we're in a step team together.
You did step.
I did do step.
I'm excited about the fact that you did step, but I do have to, I mean, I can't gloss over the fact that we're talking about Bloods. Now, was there violence? Yeah. I mean, were there carrying guns? Yeah. Like, what was going on
there?
Oh,
I got into the Blood thing because I hung out with them, and so I would wear a lot of Calvin Klein stuff. So that means CK. That's mm-hmm. Crip Killer. So CK is Crip Killer. So then I would wear, like...
I'm sure that's what Calvin Klein intended.
Sure, maybe. Yeah. Who knew? He's like, I created this unisex fragrance, CK1, for everyone, not for suburban like wiggers and and Asian kids.
Fantastic.
But I would wear, and then I would wear like a little CK1 baby tee, but like the underwear, Calvin Klein underwear would go above the size 40 Jankos.
Sure.
And then like the whole full on like dark lipstick or brown eyeliner as lip
as liner, lipstick,
and
sure.
Nothing in between. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, I'd wear, like, but sometimes I also had, like, friends. I knew some people who were in, like, a Vietnamese Crip gang. So I wasn't just Lao people. It was mainly Southeast Asia.
All right. It's getting bigger. So, hey, listen, the circle's getting bigger again.
So I'd wear blue rags sometimes, too. And
that seems dicey, no? Could you not get in trouble with one or the other? Yeah, from...
But again, it's the suburbs.
You were Romeo and Juliet.
I was. Capulets and Montagues.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, and fighting, yes. Yeah, so this is all rumbling, all of like gang culture, you know, all that's rumbling up. And as usually, like, some white kids, but a lot of the minorities, including Native American, Cambodian, like that kind of really started to change. I started talking different. Like, I remember talking to some guy and he was like, "You sound white." And I was like, "Oh, let me fix that." And then from that point on, yeah, like, and yeah, so we would get into, like, we would get into fights. I never really got hurt that bad. Like, I remember the first time.
Oh, my God, you were going through shit at home. So you, I mean,
yeah, that's true.
Sort of like a callus built up in that way.
That's true.
Imagine.
Like, middle school, I was talking smack about some girl. Her name's Hope. And I was making fun of her to her cousins because she got in a fight with a girl named Aja, who's black. And Aja, like, kicked her in the stomach and then she peed. And then I was, like, talking smack about that. So then Hope heard about that. And then we were by the buses. She came by me. She started it off. First thing she did, she took my glasses off. Because I also have glasses.
Well, that's, you know what? I'm actually really glad. That's a perfect segue. Thank you. Thank you for saying that, because what I was waiting to say, not to say that I wasn't listening to you and just waiting to say what I wanted to say next, because that's not the case. But what I was waiting to say was, this just goes to show that people have serious levels, no matter what age they are, because I also know you to be a total nerd. I know that you buried yourself in books and comic books, and I know that you were a thinker. And I think what you're describing is this kind of person that a lot of us would write off, you know, it's like, I can't relate to that person. Like, that person's not, you know, like, interested in storytelling or in, and like this, you're a perfect example of don't judge a book by its cover, literally, I guess. I don't know. But, because I know that of you. Yeah. So how does that all fit in with your glasses?
Well, to think about it is that I think it'll make a lot of sense when you think, I wasn't happy at home. I wasn't happy with the family. And then a gang culture means
it's exactly what people talk about. It's exactly what white middle class people talk about when they try to, like, and I'm absolutely, I don't know if I'm, yeah, I guess I'm guilty of this. I wasn't always like a middle class white kid. I mean, I went to school and all my friends, I went to school in a body and stuff, but But that thing that we, the way we try to understand from the outside gang culture, where we say, you know, well, it starts with a family and the family's not sound and then the gang culture and then that's where you go. Where else are you going to go? And, but there's, there's reasons like, that people talk about it that way.
Yeah, I don't feel like my parents had my back.
Yeah.
So I was looking for people that, that would, you know, and I never, because I still, yeah, you're right. Like, I mean, I got in trouble when I was younger. Like grade school and stuff, was I would get in trouble for not sleeping, and I wasn't sleeping because I was reading. Like, I'm a big reader, still am. And yeah, and now, yeah, I'm very much a comic book nerd. But yeah, it was that. It was to have friends, to have family. That's really what it was. And to kind of just be accepted.
And how do guys factor into this? Because I know you mentioned that you developed early. I'm wondering if you're comfortable talking about it. Yeah. If another way to feel accepted or to, you know, feel loved in some way was like to give yourself up in that way, or if it wasn't,
I suppose, because it's like, yeah, I started developing really early on, like fourth grade. I remember wearing. My mom got me my first training bra. And then I remember a girl named Jamie, one of the popular girls, like snapping it and like people making fun of me. And so then they just like rapidly like grew. I remember sixth grade Lisa told everybody that I stuffed my bra like in the sixth grade. And so, you know, it's like,
that's such a specific kind of attention and bullying. It's interesting. It's like the sexuality piece
that.
Is
yeah.
different than, oh, you're under. It's so weird. It's like the underdeveloped thing is a very specific kind of torture. The over, quote unquote, overdeveloped thing at a certain age is a very specific kind of torture. And it's very intimate in a way that just like, I never got teased about anything sexual. I got bullied, but it was just like personality bullying. It was just general like mean bullying.
Yeah.
But nobody ever was pointing to my breasts or, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, and so that's so specific.
I get that, and then there would just be leers from old men and not understanding or fully knowing, but knowing it wasn't
so uncomfortable.
Right, and yeah. wasn't, it doesn't feel right, but not knowing how to act. But then from the outside looking like I was mature when I really wasn't, you know, acting like I was mature when I really wasn't. That was my MO. Because after my hip hop stage, I went into Young Professional, which is very where I wouldn't wear jeans.
Try it all on.
Yeah. But yeah, guys, I mean, I didn't have like my first boyfriend, my first like real boyfriend, was like 14. He was like kind of a down home boy from, he was Cambodian and he was like hip-hop too, and I lost my virginity to him at 14. But truly,
I mean, I would say that's early.
Yeah, I think that's early. Definitely, I think that's early. To Red Light Special by TLC on Valentine's Day 1994.
Oh my.
In a small apartment in St. Paul.
I wish I could remember what music I was listening to when I lost my virginity.
Really?
I still know the guy I lost it to. I could just call him up and see if he remembers.
Oh, wow.
We were real into Dire Straits, Romeo and Juliet for a while. Now I feel bad laughing about it.
No, don't feel
but
bad.
But really, it was,
don't
yeah.
Don't feel bad.
Yeah.
You were a child, or how old were you?
Bless, 16.
Yeah.
But I don't think listening to that. I know. No, we were both children. Yeah. You were even more of a child.
Yeah.
I do remember, I mean, we definitely, but I don't think that was what was playing anyway.
But see, that's like, okay, so I had sex when I was 14. I didn't have sex again until I was 19.
That's so interesting. That is a similar experience that I had. And I talked about it on the podcast with, I think, Natasha, because I think, I don't know how common that is, but I haven't had that. I've never met another person.
Really?
I didn't wait that long. At all. I think I waited like a year, year and a half. But it's unusual, I think, to do that and then take such a long hiatus.
Yeah.
If you're consensually doing it.
Yeah, and quite frankly, yeah, it was like that. Gotta say young kitty sex. Horrible.
Maybe you guys just picked the wrong song. I'm totally kidding.
It was great. It wasn't a bad experience. Yeah. We did it more than once.
Yeah.
I broke up with him. My mom was really good at like scaring scaring me to death about getting pregnant. Like, she was really, really big on that. But so these times in between, like, I didn't really date guys. Like, in the hip hop, those were the only guys that were kind of like interested in me. But my peers, the ones that I had been gone through like elementary and middle school, and I wanted them to, but I was just their buddy. I was just their little buddy. I wasn't they weren't attracted to me. Like, there were so many times when somebody like would come out like in middle school or in freshman, even up into senior, where I was like, oh, I like him, and then it would get back to them, and they'd cold shoulder me, or they'd ice me out just to like, so you know I don't like you kind of thing.
Wow.
So it's like I didn't realize, I knew that I had big boobs and that was always a thing, but I wasn't considered pretty. I think I can easily say that. Like, I remember so popular going, like, my senior year, like, in the prom picture, she's like, you look really beautiful, like, being so surprised in, like, yeah, this group picture we did, you know? And then I didn't feel until I went to California to go to FITM, to go to the Fashion Institute, and then I came back, and then I don't – again, I grew up in Eagan, which is a suburb of St. Paul, so it's predominantly white in a, you know, a white state. So I don't know if, like, guys started going to colleges and seeing different types of girls, and they, you know, you're not with the same people, that they started to get, like,
have more of an open mind. And,
yeah, a little touch of yellow fever. I don't know. All of a sudden, it was like I became exotic.
Uh-huh.
But growing up, I wasn't exotic. I was just different, and I hated that. Mm-hmm. Like, I was not the same. So, Then as I got older, it can easily go into a fetish.
Yeah, that, like, was my next question.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's let's talk about that, because that's also really, I mean, gosh, could you have had a different experience than me? Like, for so much that you and I have in common, I think emotionally, and there are so many things that I instinctively feel like we both kind of understood about each other once we started to get to know each other, which took kind of a long time, because we were sort of like the passing in the hall of the UCB world. Like, hey, Kulop, hey, Janet.
It was that retreat, you guys. That really was a turning point.
Retreat, it was. It's true. But I don't know. Yeah, the idea of being fetishized in that way, I can't even relate to, because I just feel like I'm so bland in that way. And look, I'm fetishizing you by just describing myself as bland, because that by default suddenly puts you in a totally different category.
Yeah. And I'm not even like hung up. I'm just thinking about, like, because you're so beautiful and so like Sweet Valley High. Let me both.
Oh my God, that's so gross. I never wanted to be that.
Well, you're so beautiful. Like, I don't, like, I'm just like, oh, you're both Jessica and Elizabeth.
Oh, Jessica and Elizabeth. Gross. Always wanted to be Rizzo. Always had to play Sandy. That is it in a nutshell. I just want, you know what? You look like the character that I play, that my cartoon is. That's Cora? What I, yeah. I'm like, listen, Kulop is more Cora than I am. That's what I want.
But I think, you know, going back to what, when I say like a threat and being comfortable with that, because growing up being a threat or being sexual led to me being physically and emotionally trespassed upon by people. And actually owning that power, and maybe threat's not the way to put it, but I used to be so afraid, because if I was a threat to my guy friend's girlfriend, then that was a problem.
Right.
And that needed to be overcome by putting my voice really high and trying to make everything okay.
Sure.
Being that or being sexual, because in my past I have been sexually abused, that is a problem. So trying to figure out how to have power in my sexuality, how to express myself sexually, and that me being sexual or looking the way I look is not an invitation for these things, and this stuff is not my fault. Like, that's not something. But that goes back to even with my parents, of just like, well, if I got hit, well, see what happened here is, like, let me dissect this. I made that wrong choice there. Now, if I would have not mention that part, or if I would have covered my tracks here. So then I would take it all on myself of like how I could have. But when you, that's a lot of energy. It's a lot of energy to try to see.
Again, going back to this, just sheer exhaustion of it all. And I, here's what's hard for me. And it's funny because you know me to be super emotional because we've had a lot of, you know, we've had these intimate exchanges where we've opened up about this kind of stuff. But I don't, I'm a fairly sympathetic person on the podcast, but I don't think I've ever like out and out started crying. I've been pretty close this entire podcast. Maybe it's just because I'm sick and tired. Yeah. But the thing that I struggle with so much, and I don't mean to make this a downer episode at all, because what I'm about to say is actually quite positive, is that you have achieved so much and can continue to achieve so much, not just professionally, but personally and emotionally, and you're in a wonderful relationship with someone that you love, you're married, you have wonderful friends that I respect immensely. But I just see how hard you work to work through all of the stuff that you had to go through when you were younger. And you're working so much to get through that stuff that I just want to send your soul on a vacation. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to send you somewhere where you can stop working, because I feel like you've worked your entire life, whether it was working to cope with your circumstances or working to get away from those circumstances, working to please other people, working to be accepted or to be overlooked in a way that made you feel safer than if you were getting attention. And even all of these wonderful things that you're doing with your career and your writing and your podcast and all of that, you're just working so hard. And so I guess what I just wish I could like just send you somewhere where you could just relax and be waited upon hand and foot for at least a year. Well, because I don't know where your strength comes from, but I'm so in awe of it and I admire it so much.
I mean, I think the truth is that I'm on that. I'm living in that island right now. Like, all of this work is not so that I can come into this room and I can be here with you and I can not be worried that I'm repeating myself from other podcasts, because I'm here with you and I'm answering your questions fully and with thought and in the presence. And that's what all this work is for. And this is the reward for the work. And the fact that I am close with you and we are intimate, that I can share with you these things, that's the reward and that's the island. And that's, I haven't felt so full and so aware of it really ever. And so, I was talking to my friend, Hassan Minaj, and he was telling me, he also has immigrant parents, and he and his group of friends who have similar backgrounds, they talk about the immigrant hustle and how it's just like, yeah, you know, we're hustling, we're just trying to make it work. And he was like, you know, cool up, you really just need to think, like, for us, like, how far you've come from where your parents have. And in the sense of, like, for a lot of people, it's generations to get to the point where I am right now. You know, right. Again, I'm first born in this country.
Right.
And to kind of give myself that credit, not credit, but let that kind of power me, this sort of that immigrant hustle, you know?
Yeah.
And to kind of, you know, these last 3 years is just, it's been going through the fire. It's been trying to figure out how not to be weighed down by everything that happened, or the wish that it was different, or fantasize how my parents could have been better parents, or how I could have made better use of my time, of just letting myself actually just breathe here and be. And it's a way more pleasurable life. And I don't work hard to be human as much as I did before. Like,
yeah.
And so now I can work hard at the things that I think are, I want to work hard on, is my relationships, my husband, to possibly becoming, to being a mom soon, to my career, and not be bogged down by the uncertainty and the mistrust, well, of myself, like, basically. Yeah, yeah, and that's it's a better life.
If there, and perhaps you've been asked this before, but I think my question when I started this podcast would have been for young women out there who are listening to this, who may be in feeling trapped in situations like this. The life of the podcast has been such that I have listeners of all ages and people who are in all walks of life and perhaps feel trapped, not as children or as adolescents or as young people, but as adults. Is there, I mean, it feels so pat to say, like, what advice would you give? But I do feel like that's another wonderful gift that you're able to give and hopefully receive back from, just in being in a place where you could offer that up. Do you think that there's something that people can do for themselves to alleviate some of that weight if they're going through that feeling of being trapped or of not knowing themselves or being afraid to be strong?
I mean, I'm kind of a broken record. I do think everybody should be in therapy. Like, I really do. And I'm glad that I think even you and I growing up, there was like a stigma to it, but I think it's hopefully more, it's not that you're, I'm a fun crazy. That's what I think.
Delightful, delicious crazy.
Yeah. You're not, you know, it's not like you, it's not, when you go to a therapist, you're not going to a sanitarium. Like, right. But I think therapy, I think talking to, you know, I for me, if it's similar, my, I had a lot, I still have some that I won't let go of, but my family, our culture in my family was a lot very secretive, as, you know, you just didn't talk about things outside of the family. I mean, I did too much talking with my parents, and that was part of the problem too about it, but talking about it, talking to people who know,
yeah,
who get it. And if it's, yeah, talking.
It's so precious. And then that feeling of, I talk about that with a girlfriend of mine who, you know, in relationships that she's chosen, in her case, in heterosexual relationships with men, but this can be true for anyone with family members or friendships or, you know, whatever relationship you're in romantically, how important that feeling of being known is.
Yes.
And that we are social creatures and that there's nothing wrong with that, and that feeling known and understood on a really deep level and feeling respected through everything that makes you who you are is irreplaceable.
And guys, talking to yourself will make you sick. Figuring things out, it's one thing to think about things and to truly think and breathe into thinking, but it's another thing when you're sitting by yourself and you're having conversations about and essentially with people but not with them.
That's making yourself a lot crazier than going to a therapist would in terms of stigma.
Yeah, because if you have trouble, you have problems, that you, this is from somebody who I've pushed a lot down. Like, I've pushed a lot down. I've shoved food into and drink into when I've felt bad, or, you know, just to numb things down. But these are just, you're just depositing into an account that keeps getting fuller and fuller and fuller. And I don't have and what happens is then you don't know how to deal with sadness, anger, and all of that. And that's the stuff that will make you sick and will make you not close to the people you want to be close with. And it will limit your pleasure in life. So talk about it.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to stop because I'm crying again. But Kulop, thank you so much. We've talked about you doing the podcast for ages, and I told Kulop recently, like, this is one of those things where you take your friends for granted. Like, Elizabeth same hasn't done it. You know, Elizabeth hasn't done it yet either. Some of my favorite women I haven't been able to schedule with. And I think part of that was, oh, I know they'll be there. Yeah. And suddenly it just rushes up towards you and it feels too important to not do. And I couldn't let it go any longer. So,
well, I know it's like with Elizabeth too. It's like, I know you guys have scheduled it. She's been here, but then we need to talk.
Yeah, like, oh, that's definitely like, happened. Yeah. I've had like the computer open and the microphones are being lifted up with Elizabeth. And then we're like, listen, we got to dish on some stuff that has nothing to do with the podcast. Which is a friendship luxury problem to have. So I'm grateful for that. But I'm so glad that I had you on, and I just think you're amazing. You're an amazing woman. So
I think you're fantastic and gorgeous. Guys, with a wonderful voice. Oh, can we even tell that she's sick? Can we?
Oh,
only
we can
because
tell.
She said it. Only oh, because we can she tell. Said it.
Guys, as always, I welcome your questions and your comments. And, this is one of the heavier episodes. The one with Maria was fairly recent. And, it sounds like a lot of people got a little something out of it. And I hope that some of you experience something similar with this one. And, I just want to thank everybody for your sensitivity. I couldn't be more blessed in terms of having sensitive, bright, caring, funny, intuitive listeners, and the comments that I get speak to that entirely, and so thank you for that, because it makes me feel very safe bringing a friend like Kulop in, and I'm crying again. It makes me feel very safe to offer her up to you. So thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Before We Were Brittle, courtesy of the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.